Staying Out of Bravo and Charlie, How GA Can Make Life Easier. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, CFI, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. We like to get together on Monday and talk about issues facing, I guess, sometimes safety issues, but also in general, issues facing the flight training industry. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Well, Paul, I'm happy to be with you.
I want to talk about something that you're going to be talking about in the May edition of Over the Airwaves, and that is the dynamics of primary flight training that involves operations at large airports. And you have a couple of things you've talked about as recurring themes lately, and I wanted to get into them with you. The first one is the idea of general aviation aircraft have the right to use these big airports, but there may be a point at which we become a pest and that hurts our long-term interests. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Well, Paul, you know, clearly general aviation needs to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem in this constantly changing national airspace system that we all live and operate in. And what prompted my thoughts in this regard, I found myself doing a landing at Buffalo's Class C airport, Buffalo Niagara International Airport. And it was a windy afternoon. We had about a 40-knot headwind, 50-knot headwind at about 2,000 feet. And I'm in a Cessna 172, and we're barely making 50 to 60 knots over the ground. And Southwest 737 was waiting for our arrival before the tower controller would release them. And it appeared to me that we were just simply delaying operations at that airport. And I volunteered to do a 360 degree turn out there to allow the Southwest 737 to depart and try to maintain some sort of schedule. The tower immediately granted my suggestion, and the crew of the Southwest aircraft expressed their appreciation for us doing that. And I thought to myself, did I really need to be at that airport during rush hour, you know, during the late evening or late afternoon, early evening, doing simple landing and takeoff operations? And I thought to myself after I got back, the answer was no. You know, certainly there is a time when we need to do training of students at larger airports, tower-controlled airports, but if we all could, you know, limit our training to these larger airports during non-peak hours, you know, mid-afternoon, weekends, and try to stay away during the busy rush hours, that would be a positive contribution to the entire national airspace system. That's what prompted my article.
Well, Bob, when I was learning to fly, I was in an area where the nearest big airport was Portland, Oregon, and we had a couple of choices for towered Class D airports that did not have regularly scheduled service. And so we had some options where we could go there, you know, even at what you would think would be rush hour, and really not have any problem getting in and out without inconveniencing anybody. What's it like in your area, and are there other places in the country where your only choice for a towered airport is going to be in somebody's way?
Well, you know, certainly here in the Buffalo area, we have Niagara Falls, which is just what you described, a Class D airport tower, and a wonderful training facility. And when we do need to do tower-controlled operations, that's a great airport to do it. They like to have our services up there. And yeah, that would be a great option. And I think most communities have that time. And back to the Class C or even the Class Bravo airport, the large airport, occasionally we can slip in there. And, you know, my readers know that we do advanced IFR training in the New York City Class B airspace, but we try to get in there during non-peak hours so as not to interrupt operations. The entire point, of course, is to conduct training in those busier airports when it's most convenient to the system to do that. And that's a point of just simple convenience and being a cooperative industry to do this. There are other reasons for limiting our training at the Class B and C airports as well, and perhaps we can get into those as well.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that there's a safety issue, and in Over the Airwaves, you talk a little bit about a close call at Burbank.
Yes, this past April, it was reported by the NTSB that a Boeing Southwest again, Boeing 737, in this case carrying 119 passengers, had a very close near miss with a Cessna 172 doing touch and goes. In fact, the vertical separation was less than 200 feet and laterally by just 10 feet. So, you know, while extremely remote, there's a safety factor too when we mix general aviation aircraft with airline operations. You know, I mean, the worst possible disaster for general aviation, of course, would be an incident involving a small GA aircraft and a Part 121 air carrier. I mean, this would be a death blow to general aviation, and I think we need to do everything in our power to absolutely minimize the likelihood of something like this ever taking place. And here again is another reason for limiting our operations, our GA training operations, to non-Class C and B airports whenever possible.
Okay, you've also talked about an economic advantage in maybe doing this, and we'll get into that after the break. Bob Miller is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Wass GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Wass, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about training missions into and out of airports of various sizes. And Bob, we talked a little bit a moment ago about the courtesy and safety and other aspects of avoiding big airports, or at least avoiding them at peak times. But also in the May edition of Over the Airwaves, you talk about your experiment there with what you were trying to set out to prove with Bob Miller Flight Training. And among the economic factors you talk about, you say our training costs are lower than big airport flight schools. Tell us where those differences are.
Well, no question. Again, I was over at Buffalo International just a couple of days ago, and found myself waiting on the ramp, engine running. Of course, when the engine's running, the Hobbs time is running. The student is paying for this time, and I'm waiting several minutes for clearance delivery to take my clearance request and then come back with a clearance for a VFR departure, and then switching over to ground control and a rather lengthy taxi to the active runway, and then waiting to cross the intersecting runway for 2 or 3 minutes. And then waiting at the active runway behind three departing jetliners, this added another 8 or 9 minutes to the deal. So you add it all up, and the departure out of that airport added some 20 minutes to the flight time that is chargeable to the student, but we never left the ground. And then when you come back into the larger airports, when you're number 3 in line for landing or number 4 in line for landing, this can add another 20 minutes. So, you know, add 40 minutes to each of 30 training flights out over the course of a private pilot certificate. You can see, I mean, you can count the dollars and thousands that it's costing the student to train at the larger Class C airport as compared to a smaller GA airport where we have virtually no taxi delays and nearly no air traffic delays getting in or out. So when you add the cost of an airplane that's renting for $130 an hour and an instructor who's being paid whatever he's being paid, you know, we're looking at something close to $200 an hour when we did the math, it was well over $2,500 for a private pilot certificate in savings just operating out of the smaller non-towered field.
Well, and let's talk about it from the standpoint of the flight school that's renting aircraft at a wet rate. If I recall correctly, the fuel prices at Buffalo International are considerably higher than they are at Buffalo Lancaster.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And when the FBO is running the flight school, there's an incentive there to keep the engines turning as long as you can, because you're selling fuel to yourself it's all part of the entire profit picture there. So here again, I mean, there are some advantages to doing training at the larger tower controlled field, but just enough to provide the student with an understanding of how to deal with clearance, delivery, ground control, tower, and departure control. But to do that with every single flight in a private pilot certificate is adding considerably to the overall cost. There's no question about it.
Well, it sounds like we might be in a position to do some of our starving local airports a favor and just think about it when we have these decisions come up.
I think so. Absolutely.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate your insight and your thoughts. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find Bob's latest newsletter and links to his flight school at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.